Yes.
And then we'll do the word by word synonyms.
Manaschaikagriya buddhya magavatyakilatmani vasudeva samadoya chacharaha payovritam.
So you can repeat.
Chintayanti.
Chintayanti.
Constantly thinking.
Constantly thinking.
Ekeha.
Ekeha.
With one attention.
Buddha.
And intelligence. Mahapurusha.
Mahapurusha.
Upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Ishvaram.
Ishvaram.
The Supreme Controller, Lord Vishnu. Pradriya, completely controlling. Indriha, the senses. Dushta, formidable, powerful. Ashtan,
horses.
Manasa, by the mind. Buddhi sat at the key. With the help of intelligence. The chariot driver. Manaha. The mind. Cha.
Also.
Eka agriha. With full attention. Buddhya. With the intelligence. Bhagavati. Under the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Akhila Atmani, the Supreme Soul, the Super Soul of all living entities. Vasudeva, unto Lord Vasudeva. Samadhaya, keeping full attention. Chachara, executed. Ha, thus, payavratam, the ritualistic ceremony known as payavrata. So translation, with full undiverted attention, Aditi thought of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and in this way brought under full control her mind and senses, which resembled forceful horses. She concentrated her mind upon the Supreme Lord Vasudeva. Thus she performed the ritualistic ceremony known as payavrata. You can repeat, with full undiverted attention.
Full undiverted attention.
Aditi thought of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Aditi thought of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
And in this way, brought under full control, her mind and senses. Which resembled forceful horses. She concentrated her mind upon the Supreme Lord Vasudeva. Thus she performed the ritualistic ceremony known as payavrata. So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. This is the process of bhakti yoga. Anya vilashita shunyam jnana karma jana vratam anakulyena krishnana shilanam bhaktir uttama. One should render transcendental loving service to the Supreme Lord Krishna favorably and without desire for material profit or gain through fruitive activities or philosophical speculation. That is called pure devotional service. One simply has to concentrate upon the lotus feet of Vasudeva Krishna. So Vaimana Krishna Padaravinde O. Then the mind and senses will be controlled and one can engage himself fully in the devotional service of the Lord. The devotee does not need to practice the Hatha Yoga system to control the mind and senses. His mind and senses are automatically controlled because of unalloyed devotional service to the Lord. So, Chintayanjikiha Bhudya Mahapurusamishvaram Ragriyandriya Tushtashvan Manasaburi Sarthi Manas Achaikagriya Bhudya Bhagavacha kilatmadeva vasudeves samadaya chacharahai payohu ratham. So, Om Ganatimanandasha Gananjana Shlapya Chakshur Vimitika Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So this is a typical example that's given in the Upanishads, and the example has been cited by Srila Prabhupada many times. The example, of course, is the body is the chariot, and the horses are the senses, and the reins are the mind, and the intelligence is the driver, and the passenger in that particular picture in the Bhagavad Gita, at least the original Bhagavad Gita, the passenger is just like getting all upset because of the horses, the reins, and the mind are just dragging them all over the place. Anyway, the passenger is the soul. And so we practically experienced uncontrolled horses. I'm not talking about senses. This is a metaphor right now. I practically experienced uncontrolled senses many years ago. I was trying to start a farm community in Florida, and there was a horse. So I just thought, you know, horses, you know, I'm a horse whisperer, whatever they call it. So I can, I'm a devotee, you know, I can just definitely communicate with horses. So I jumped on the back of the horse, and the horse took me everywhere. I was just screaming, you know, please stop, go here, go there. He even had reins. You know, it's not that I jumped on the back of a bareback horse. I would not do that. But had reins and a saddle. But the horse knew that I didn't know what I was doing. I had no training. Even though when I was young, my parents used to take me for these horsey back rides. Anyone done that when they were young? Horsey back rides, yeah. Where they lead you around on a little pony. And so, but basically I had no training riding horses. And the horse just like, took me probably a mile or two away. And I said, help, help. And the devotees are just watching me recede into the distance, being taken away by the illusory energy of the Supreme Personality of God. You know, that's a metaphor, obviously. And then, so eventually I just had to jump off the horse. Now, we cannot jump off this body and get liberated. You know, it's not that suicide will get you off the horse or out of the control of the horse. You still have the senses, at least the senses at that particular juncture will be the subtle senses when you commit suicide. And then you'll still have desires and you won't have any means to fulfill it. And avritam gyanam itena gyanino nichvayana kamarupena kuntiya dushbrena lainacha. In other words, one will be forced to act helplessly according to the impulses of the senses. And the more you try to satisfy it, the more you get inflamed. Everyone is forced to act helplessly. Anyway, so we are confronted with this particular situation now that, you know, these senses. And of course we have this prasadam prayer, which very few people know the translation to, which is, of all the senses, the tongue is the most voracious and uncontrollable. And so when we take prasadam, we're actually praying to Krishna to help us control the tongue while we take prasadam with love, actually. That's what the prasadam prayer means, you know. So here I would judge, tend to take a lot. So in love, call out. Dako means to call out. You understand? In love, call out for Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda to please help us. So that's really interesting. So as we're taking prasadam, it's not that we just say that before taking prasadam, but as we're taking prasadam, we should be there. Krishna, help me control the senses as we're taking prasadam. It's interesting. And so one has to be careful not eating too much, even with prasadam. Prabhupada said many stalwarts have fallen down in the name of Mahaprasadam, which is interesting. How do you fall down in the name of Mahaprasadam? Well, you eat too much. Vajra Vega, Manasakrota Vega. You know, controlled by the tongue, belly, genitals, mind, anger, and words. So one has to be careful. So we have to always be crying out for this. And so even in such a case of addiction here, it says the senses resemble forceful horses. And that's addiction. She's a high-class person. I mean, we're here on this earth planet. And so we are being asked by Krishna and by our spiritual master to always remember Krishna, always think of Krishna. In fact, I'm going to make reference to the Gita. In the Gita, in the sixth chapter, after describing the least part of the Hatha Yoga process, Krishna says, you know, really what you're supposed to do is yomam pashati sarvatra, sarvam chamayi pashati tashyam napramashyami asachame napravashati. You're supposed to always think of me, basically. You know, and of course, in the 18th chapter, we also have what manmana bhavamad bhakto. But I'm talking right now about the 6th chapter of the Gita, where Krishna says, one who sees me everywhere, sees everything in me, is never lost to me, nor is he ever, never am I ever lost to him. You know, so it's like a reciprocal thing. Yomam pashati, who sees me, pashati, sarvatra, everywhere. Sarvam chamayi pashati. So anyway, one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me is never lost to me, nor am I ever lost to him. So anyway, so Krishna gives that instruction basically after he teaches Arjuna how to control the mind in the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And Arjuna says, this is not practical. Which is really interesting. It's really interesting. Arjuna says this is actually not practical and not, the other word uses, unendurable is the other word. Can you imagine that? Like God gives you instructions how to do yoga. It's not like the modern yoga studios now that where they turn up the heat sometimes. I'm not going to mention what type of yoga that is. And you're in your leotards, not the men, of course, or you're in your swimsuit. And you say, well, this is great. But actually, Arjuna, being a little humble, when he's told by Krishna that the real purpose of yoga is to control the mind and fix the mind on him, Arjuna said it's unendurable. For those of you who don't know English, unendurable, endurance means toleration. You know, so it's intolerable. That's another word for unendurable, isn't it? It's intolerable. The system of yoga you taught me is completely intolerable. And then, right after that, you know, Arjuna says to Krishna, the famous verse in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, Chanchala Imanata, Balavadradam, Dashaham Nigram Manye Vayori Vashudushkaram. That the mind is impossible to control. It's restless, turbulent, obstinate, very strong, and to control it is more difficult than the wind. And then Krishna, after that, says in the 6th chapter of the Gita, he says, by constant practice and determination. So Krishna teaches you have to practice doing this. Just like anything else, you have to practice. It's not that the mind automatically comes under control. Just like if one's going to engage in any sort of sporting activity, you have to practice every day. Every day. Like if you're going to run the marathon or the... Just like dear Krishna runs marathons. So he has to practice continually. Not hopefully every day. So he has to practice. And someone who actually is running in the Olympics, they have to practice hours and hours and hours every day. I mean, sometimes I'm working in the park and I run into people who are practicing to run races. And they're just like running up the hill, panting, and I'm thinking, oh my God. And so that's really what's required. And then Krishna, in the 7th chapter, he actually answers Arjuna's doubts. And he teaches Arjuna, what is that practice? you know, the seventh chapter is called Knowledge of the Absolute. So he teaches Arjuna what is that practice, and he begins the seventh chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Now I'm going to teach you that knowledge, which it's called Knowledge of the Absolute, by which you can know me in full, free from doubt. In other words, in the sixth chapter, he tells Arjuna, you should know me, you should always think of me, see me everywhere. And then Krishna says, I'm going to really teach you the process, beginning with the seventh chapter. And in the seventh chapter, it's quite interesting that you would think that Krishna would start talking about what? His pastimes in Vrindavan or something like that? That was what naturally you think, Krishna's going to teach me how to think of him, know him in free, know him in full, free from doubt. And so you think, wow, get ready for the ras, you know, the nectar. No, ras doesn't mean nectar. Amrit means nectar. But get ready for the tasty nectar. Amrita ras. And then Krishna proceeds, for the most part, in the seventh chapter of the Gita, he proceeds to tell Arjuna about the material world and how he's manifested in the material world. So, and different aspects of the material world. And he also decries worship of the demigods in the seventh chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. So you're wondering, why is Krishna doing? Why is he teaching Arjuna about these mundane subject matters? Well, he's teaching Arjuna about these mundane subject matters because in order to know Krishna free from doubt, in order to always see Krishna everywhere and see everything in Krishna, then you have to find out about Krishna's energies, especially in this material world, because that's where we are, in the material world. And of course in the Isopanishad, the 11th, I believe it's the 11th verse of the, yeah, the 11th verse of the Isopanishad, it's stated that one should cultivate knowledge of nescience as well as cultivating knowledge of, you know, transcendence at the same time in order to get out of the material world. So there's an interesting discussion about what does it mean to cultivate knowledge of nescience, you know, avidya. There's vidya and avidya. So it means several things. First of all, we had this interesting discussion the other day with someone about it. First of all, it means understanding Sankhya, you know, Krishna's description of the material world, understanding the modes of nature. You know, Krishna gets into detail describing the modes of nature, not so that we can simply go and point fault in people who are in the mode of ignorance. You know, devotees oftentimes use this description or these descriptions in the Gita to just like look at those who are not in the Krishna consciousness movement, who previously we used to call karmis, which is not an appropriate designation, because karmi means one who is actually engaged in, like, karma yoga or karma vijra bhakti, or at least following the Vedic injunctions to a certain extent. But anyway, so then we would just look at people and just, like, find fault. Ah, he's in ignorance. Or even find fault with the other brahmacharis, the other devotees in the temple, isn't it? Prabhu, you're in ignorance. You're so passionate. You know, actually, the whole description of the modes of nature is mainly used by devotees to find fault in others. So, but it's meant to analyze our own consciousness and how we are being affected. As we quoted before, that everyone is forced to act helplessly according to the impulses born in the modes of material nature. So, and that's all there is in the material world, is the modes of nature interacting with the material energy, forcing people to act, think, feel in different ways. And so we have to be able to understand this aspect of Sankhya. Not Sankhya in terms of, you know, the analyzing the 24 elements. I mean, that's a little bit complex for me. To go through earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, false ego, the perceptive senses, the active senses, isn't it? I don't even know how to do that, even though I've read the Piladev's instructions in the Bhagavatam many times. You know, you merge this sense into that sense, and that sense, I said, huh? What does it mean to merge the sense of touch into the sense of taste? Does it mean like, put my fingers in my mouth or something. I mean, I have no idea. I just, to be frank, how to do those things. But Sankhya, in terms of understanding the modes of nature, how they're affecting us, how they're affecting the mind, and be able to discriminate between matter and spirit. That's really the point of Sankhya. To understand what is spirit and what is matter. And unfortunately, because we make mistakes and we have imperfect senses and we cheat and all those other nice things, we are often bewildered as far as that's concerned. So another reason for cultivating nescience, or the knowledge of nescience, we don't want to cultivate nescience, is to cultivate the knowledge of nescience so we can understand how to do things in Krishna's service. Right? I mean, we have to understand. I mean, certain things may be too much cultivation of nescience. Just like I was listening to one of my godbrothers, his name was Sachin Narayan. Interesting story. He had studied science and medicine when he went to his undergraduate studies in the university. So he was thinking, now that I've become Krishna conscious, then I should now go into Ayurveda. This is really interesting. And so, you know, devotees have all these different ways of engaging their desires in Krishna's service. So anyway, so he goes to India, flies to India to ask Prabhupada whether he can study Ayurveda. Okay, arrives in Bombay, and after a few days he gets in to see Srila Prabhupada, goes into Prabhupada's room, and he asks Prabhupada, can I study Ayurveda? Prabhupada looks at him and says, not now. You know, so then he doesn't get the message yet. So Prabhupada says, not now. All right, so he thinks, well, okay, later Prabhupada, okay? And then he walks out of the room. So then, a few months later, he's still in India, waiting for an opportunity to ask Prabhupada that important question, whether he should study Ayurveda. And then finally, he's with Prabhupada in another location, I forget what location it was. Anyway, he gets into Prabhupada, and he says, Prabhupada, I want to study Ayurveda. And this is the need of a spiritual master, too, because obviously, if it wasn't for his having the guidance of Srila Prabhupada, he would be studying Ayurveda. And so, Prabhupada looks at him, and he says, what is the use? He says, I like Western medicine. You know, I use Western medicine because it works pretty well. It's very advanced. And so that really, like, blows this guy, not guy, you know, like, blows his mind, so to speak. He says, better you study my books. And so then, this devotee, Sachin Narayan, very nice devotee, he went on Prabhupada's library party, instead of studying Ayurveda, he went on Prabhupada's library party in India. And he literally distributed tens of thousands of books to different libraries. That's an interesting story. He even went to Kashmir. Kashmir, of course, is a mostly Muslim area. And he, anyway, I can tell the story because this is a Prabhupada story. Anyway, so he goes to this university library in Kashmir. And he thinks, you know, what are we doing in Kashmir? Everybody's Muslim. You know, who's going to take the book? So he goes in and approaches the librarian or the professor. And he says, we have these books by A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And the librarian says, I already have some of them. And the librarian brings out the three original books of Srila Prabhupada. The Bhagavatam, of course. And he said that your spiritual master came here and distributed these books to me. So, anyway, then he goes back to tell Prabhupada about this. You know, Prabhupada's in Vrindavan at this particular point, so he goes back to Vrindavan to see Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, yes, you know, I was in Kashmir, and Prabhupada had become so happy, so pleased with this devotee, because he has gone out and distributed books in this difficult place in Kashmir. And Kashmir is difficult. It's very dangerous, actually. You need special visa to go to Kashmir. You can't just go, at least if you're from a foreigner, you can't immediately go to Kashmir, because there's all sorts of problems and what's called the line of control. LOC between India and Pakistan. So Prabhupada is very pleased, you know, pats him on the head and everything like that. So it wasn't necessary for him, it wasn't necessary for him to study Nesham's, that aspect of Nesham's. So oftentimes we become very enthusiastic to study too much Nesham's. But we have to study and understand some to become expert, because one of the qualities of a devotee is that a devotee is expert. Expert in dealing in the material world. Like you see, Prabhupada was extremely expert. I mean, he knew how to deal with Mr. Nair, and that was a real challenge. Prabhupada was so expert that, you know, he knew to wait in one particular juncture until Mr. Nair's and his spiritual, and his so-called spiritual master were sleeping, and then he pulled them away from his spiritual master. His spiritual master was still in bed sleeping. And so he could actually, Prabhupada could sort of manipulate the situation and control Mr. Nair without his so-called advisor, spiritual master. So Prabhupada, if you read Prabhupada Lilamrita, you'll see how expert Prabhupada was dealing with the material energy and how precise he was, and how, another story I heard last night, there was one devotee who was cleaning Prabhupada's room. And Prabhupada was just coming in 2 minutes, so she thought, well, let me leave the light on for Prabhupada. So she left the light on, and Prabhupada came back and saw the light on, and he got very upset. He said, who has left this light on? And oftentimes in Mayapur it was like that too. The Prabhupada would look in a room and see the fan running, and the room was locked. The Prabhupada would get upset. So, you know, there's someone who's dealing very expertly with Krishna's material energy. Very, very expertly with Krishna's energy. So, anyway, there's a fine line. You don't want to become too expert, so it has nothing to do with service, so it just titillates our mind, and we don't want to become just too spaced out either. You know, spaced out, of course, for those of you who don't know what spaced out means, that means not attentive, making so many mistakes. You know, and there's stories like Shruta Kirti, you know, where different devotees making mistakes, and Prabhupada would chastise them for making a mistake. And then they would use as an excuse, I'm a conditioned soul, Prabhupada. Can you imagine that? You know, spiritual master chastises you. You know, why'd you do this nonsense? And says, well, I'm just a conditioned soul, Prabhupada. Prabhupada would get more upset and chastise them more, because that's just an excuse. So the reason we become expert is so we can engage Krishna's energy, because the point is that the very same thing that can entangle you in this material world can be the cause of your liberation. The example is given sometime in the Shastras. Like if one has a thorn in his foot, sometimes the best way, and especially in Vrindavan, we've experienced this, is to get another thorn to pick it out. You know, if you don't happen to have a tweezers with you. So it takes a thorn to get a thorn out. So the same thing that's the cause of our entanglement, it can be the cause of our liberation. In other words, using Krishna's energy in Krishna's service. And in the Gita, in the fourth chapter, this is a very nice verse that illustrates this, fourth chapter, text 24. Brahmarpanam brahmahavir ramagno brahmana tam brahmatena gantavya brahma karma samadhi. And just like it's discussed here, that the word samadhi, samadhaya, she was absorbed in, let's see, Prabhupada translates that, keeping full attention, which means absorption. So she was absorbed in Krishna, in Vasudeva, his expansion of Krishna. So in this particular verse of the Bhagavad Gita, we find that if one, I'm going to paraphrase it, not give an exact translation, if one serves Krishna, does something for Krishna, yukta vairagya, and does it in a concentrated way, let's say attentively does it for Krishna, understanding, of course, that it's for Krishna, because that's important too. Understanding it's for Krishna, Brahmarpanam Brahmahavir, metaphor being used here is it's like offering ghee into the fire. Javier or Javi means ghee. Just like one of my godbrothers' name is Javi. I don't know if you ever met Javi. He's a famous singer in Venezuela. He and I worked together for many years. Anyway, so his name is Guy. Imagine, what is your name? Clarified butter. That's really interesting. Some of the names are really interesting. Like one devotee has a name, Mahamaya. What's your name? Krishna's illusory energy. Very nice. So, but she's a pure devotee. So, Brahma Pranam Brahma Havir. So if one makes an offering of ghee into the fire, just like Prabhupada would sometimes say during the fire sacrifice, that the smoke is purifying. You know, ordinary smoke is not purifying. It's not that sometimes we go to the airport and they have this camel room. You know what a camel room is? Yeah, the smoking room. There's a big picture or a sticker of a camel on the outside. This is in Europe especially, it's like that. And everyone there is just puffing away. Getting cancer. And that smoke is not purified. So, but the smoke from a fire and the ghee and everything offered into the fire is purifying. Like the prasadam or the bhoga being offered to the deities is purifying. Brahmarpanam brahmahavir. Brahmagno brahmanahutam. Brahma tena gantavya brahma karma samadhi. There have been different translations of that verse. I remember in the original blue Bhagavad Gita, it was one who makes a full contribution to Brahman, then the offering, the person making the offering, and the result of the offering, everything becomes Brahman, which is interesting. Everything becomes Brahman. In other words, it becomes purified because Krishna's material energy is Krishna's material energy. Mama Maya Dharachya. It's difficult, but it's Mama Maya. It's Krishna's energy. And because it's Krishna's energy, Krishna can make the energy pure. He can transform matter to spirit or spirit to matter, whatever he likes. And so that process of meditating on what we're doing for Krishna, this is the point I'm making, that by meditating on what we're doing for Krishna, that in itself is purifying. That's meditation on Krishna. In fact, in the beginning, it says in the beginning, devotional service were attached to a particular service. I remember, you know, there's one story of a devotee driving a car for Prabhupada, and he wasn't concentrating on driving the car. You know, like many times, you know, we think, I want to be Krishna conscious. So we pick up our bead bag as we're driving the car. And, you know, and we're not attentive. But actually, if you're attentive to driving the car, and it's for Krishna. That is Krishna consciousness. That's non-different from Krishna. If you're buying bhoga for Krishna, if you're cleaning the floor in the temple, that's the same as dressing the deities. I mean, the Prabhupada said that actually, because at Mandira Maharshananda, we chant every morning. But that's the same as dressing the deities. I mean, any little humble service you're doing. If you're doing some construction, pounding some nails, boom, boom, boom. That's like with the cartels. I mean, it's not that we just do that and not use cartels and not chant Hare Krishna. But now that's spiritual. You know, that's spiritual activity. I mean, sometimes Prabhupada would actually appreciate the sound of construction. He said, no, son, at least something's going on, you know, it's Krishna. It's construction. So that's the point. If we have some service that we've been given for Krishna, we should do it nicely, concentrate on it, not just think, you know, this is in the way of my real service. You know, of course, chanting is also service, hearing is also service, but you know, you got the Navabhakti process. And so you meditate on it, how to do it nicely for Krishna. You're cooking for Krishna, how to do it nicely. That is samadhi, Rama Karma Samadhi. And that's interesting. Rama, Karma, Samadhi. Of course, there's one particular group, the Rama Kumaris, who love this particular verse, but they don't do it for Krishna, so they just keep saying it, but they don't do it. So in other words, that's Samadhi, that's absorption. That's the highest stage of yoga, you know, yam, yam, asana, prachahara, dharma, dhyana, samadhi by being absorbed in Krishna's service. And we're so fortunate that we're able to do this. So, I think that's all we have time for. Any quick questions? We got about 15 seconds left or something. No? Okay.
Well,
talk
about fixing things up. I was just reading probably the Corbett book where he goes to Australia and a year later he'd go back and he'd see how things had improved, you know, and it reflected the devotees' consciousness, how they're trying to make things nicer. You know, every time he showed up at a temple, he saw the differences that was.
Yeah, that's their consciousness. And the cleanliness. And the cleanliness, too. You know, that reflects the consciousness. Not that, I remember brahmachari ashrams in the past have been so messy and dirty. Prabhupada said, our temple should be revolutionary clean. Okay, on that happy note, all glorious to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Thank you.
Divine grace. Abhaya Chananada Bhaktivananda Goswami.